Thanks so much for joining us today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, and we're turning our attention to wetlands. Wetlands, they're very important to our environment. They're being fragmented quite a bit, and they're being removed by human development in cases, and so disappearing a little bit. So as well as the wetlands, the species that make wetlands their home, it's a pretty diverse group of species, are being affected as well. So lots of interest in wetlands and maintaining them as well. And we have a couple of guests to talk with you about our wetlands. Katie Belfus, one of them, back once again, Director of Outreach for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Katie, welcome back.
Thanks so much, Larry. Always great to be here.
With us as well, Paul Burns. Paul's a fisheries biologist with the U.S. Forest Service. And Paul, thank you for joining us.
You bet, Larry. Pleasure to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here. Both Paul and Katie are involved in the upcoming Wetlands Science Conference in La Crosse. And certainly we're going to talk about that conference as well, but we're zero in on wetlands and their importance with our guests. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments. Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, email address, talk@wpr.org. Katie, we've got the 30th Annual Wisconsin Wetlands Association Wetland Science Conference. It's going to be in La Crosse, February 25th through the 27th. What's the theme of this year's conference?
Well, we learned that the 30th anniversary present is a pearl, so we called our conference Exploring the Confluence, Pearls of Wisdom for Wetlands, Waters, and Communities, because all of those things are connected, and we're very excited for lots of conversations that will happen on those topics.
Yeah, I would bet. What can people planning to attend the conference expect to hear?
We have 2.5 days of oral presentations, poster presentations, workshops, working groups, roundtables, lots of networking activities, and several symposia this year, including the one that Paul is headlining and part of, that's really intended to bring together the trout community, folks that are working on stream restoration for trout habitat, with wetland community practitioners who are working on restoration for wetland sake, and local towns who are struggling with water quantity issues, with a lot of flooding and erosion and damage to their communities. And all these three communities are coming together to learn how we can do a better job of putting streams and wetlands together and working together, because they can provide together more benefits than either wetland restoration or stream restoration separately could provide alone.
Sam, the conference is being held at the same time and venue as the Trout Unlimited Driftless Area Stream Restoration Conference. Well, I assume these events are coordinated in at least in some fashion.
Indeed they are. In fact, we've been planning it from the beginning. So Trout Unlimited is having their trout symposium on Tuesday all day. And then our conference starts with workshops Tuesday afternoon and continues Wednesday and Thursday. And many people who are attending that trout session on Tuesday, their symposium, will also be attending our conference on Wednesday. And that's when we focused the content that Paul is participating with, that symposium on stream and wetland restoration, restoring those systems.
Paul,
so we'll have folks going to both.
Good. And Paul, you know, you're a fisheries biologist with the U.S. Forest Service, have been. How important is it to bring the wetland community and the trout habitat community together?
Oh, it's so very important, Larry. It's, you know, they're tied so closely. And you know, for years, we've been kind of in separate silos doing restoration work. And it really doesn't make sense for us to be separate, but to tie them both together to improve the rivers and streams as whole complex systems instead of individually.
I want to bring Rick from Thorpe, Wisconsin, into the conversation here for a minute. Rick, what's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. Hello?
Yes, what's on your mind, Rick?
Okay, here in central Wisconsin, we've got lots of farmers that are putting in drain tiles in all their fields and even in the swampy areas. And I'm wondering if they need permits for that. They don't seem to get permits. And it, it's widespread.
Well, Katie, let me turn to you for that question. Do they need permits, or they can just do that on their own?
Well, I will confess, as Outreach Programs Director, questions on permitting is a little bit out of my wheelhouse. There certainly is a lot of regulation to make, over farming activities, but it is a frequent occurrence, as your caller pointed out, Rick pointed out, that these drain tiles go in. There are also lots of programs and funding to help farmers who have fields that are wet to figure out how to get them off their back, right? Like, if you're putting in so much effort to drain this field to make a productive field, that's costing you a lot of money. And are there some alternatives for possibly restoring wetland habitat on those super wet acres so that you don't have to pay those bills? Not saying we don't need farming. We absolutely need farming. It's essential. But sometimes we can marry conservation. We know we have to marry conservation and farming. It's critical for all of us.
Paul, I want to turn to you for a minute. You're heading a symposium at the conference on principles of hydrology. Is that correct?
Well, hydrology and fisheries biology, yes. Yep.
So talk about hydrology. How key is hydrology to wetland restoration efforts?
Well, it's the thing that makes, it makes the wetlands initially and keeps them functional. If you don't have the restore the hydrology to the stream systems, the wetlands are a lot of cases just barely hanging on and nowhere near functioning to their potential that we've would have seen historically, prior to disturbance.
Larry, can I hop in there just for a minute? Because
sure.
Sometimes I get question marks from folks when I use the word hydrology. What the heck is that? So I just want to say in real simple terms that hydrology is basically the way water moves across a landscape and how the water comes into a wetland or through a stream and how it goes out and what's happening with the groundwater, because all that stuff is interacting. It's all connected. And so in our mind, you can't restore a wetland or a stream if you don't look at where the water is coming from and where it's going to. You have to look at that whole system. And that's what Paul means when he says hydrology. It has to be at the base, at the core of all of the restoration activities if they're to be successful.
Yeah. And Paul, I was looking at some comments that you've made and so forth. And you talk about process-based preservation.
Yep. So, process-based is about looking at the processes or the kind of functions that made the conditions prior to disturbance. So you have to really understand how wetlands and streams and fish habitat are formed historically and what processes affect those to be able to restore them. If you don't, if you don't understand that initially, you're kind of shooting in the dark of how to make things more productive.
And that would kind of change some of the focus, if I'm not mistaken, on how we've looked at things in the past. Talk about that a bit.
Yes, so I spent 30 years in the Pacific Northwest trying to restore habitat for, endangered coho salmon and other species in our streams out here. And, we kind of what we call had our stream goggles on. So we were kind of just looking at the way the stream was functioning and trying to put in like pieces of wood to scour pools or adding rocks in to make more spawning habitat or that sort of thing without really considering how the whole stream was functioning and kind of prioritizing where restoration is done. And so by taking a step back and understanding how the whole watershed or how your whole drainage is formed and what's keeping it in a certain condition, you get a better understanding of what you need to do to improve that. So, you know, wetlands in particular, you know, are critical to storing nutrients in the stream system and providing habitat requirements for, you know, like you said, a whole host of species, both aquatic and terrestrial.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll give our listeners a chance to join in. If you have a question or comment, I hope you will. The number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address, talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. So over your tenure, Paul, have you seen more habitat disappear, wetland habitat disappear than you wish wouldn't have?
Definitely you have, you know, it kind of depends on where in the country you are. You know, out in the Northwest, there's been more of a focus of kind of restoring wetlands and estuaries to more productive areas. So there's been a concerted effort of trying to protect those and restore those areas more. In other parts of the country, we haven't quite got there yet. And we're trying to encourage folks to see the value of wetlands and river systems and try to work together to improve those.
Yeah. Well, Katie, that's...
I think, Larry, if I can chime in there. Sorry to interrupt. I just would add that, you know, wetlands are sort of the poor stepchild, if you'll allow that bad analogy, in the conservation world. For a really long time, wetlands were actually sought out for destruction. Our government promoted wetland destruction because wetlands were seen as a blight on the landscape or an impediment to progress because we couldn't figure out what to do with them, how they could serve us. And we didn't understand yet all of the ways that they do serve us. And so Paul and I and all of us working on wetland conservation, we're running up against that and trying to change the way people think about wetlands because people have a negative association. And we're trying to flip that to say, no, if you care about your community and you don't want to have flooding or you want to have better water quality or you want to have beautiful places to go relax and enjoy nature with your family or hunt or whatever, we need wetlands. And so Paul's exactly right that we're ahead in some areas and still working in other areas. I would say overall, the loss of wetland habitat has gone down broadly because we did a lot of damage early in our history. But that makes it all the more important to stop further loss and to restore some of what we have lost. In Wisconsin, we've lost half of our wetlands, which is a lot. And obviously you can't lose half of your wetlands without impacting, you know, your water quality. So we need to not only stop the harm to existing wetlands, but we need to put wetlands back in the areas, in many of the areas where they have been lost.
Juliana, who's north of Medford, has a question. I think it kind of relates to all this. Juliana, what's on your mind?
Well, I'm aware that Greenlight Metals, a mining company from Canada, is intending to do some exploratory drilling in the Chequamegon National Forest in Taylor County. And that is in close proximity to the Yellow River. And I am in numerous other wetlands. There are a lot of swampland. So I'm concerned about the possibility of toxins getting into the environment there. And I'm just wondering what you, if you have any measures as far as what you do about that, any kind of pollution there, if you are going to be monitoring the contamination possibilities there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, our organization as a nonprofit, it doesn't have any regulatory authority. We do very frequently partner with folks at the Department of Natural Resources here in Wisconsin or the Army Corps of Engineers when these kinds of projects come up to make sure that people are paying attention to the wetlands and that there's good mapping of where are the wetlands in that area, how are they connected to our streams and our rivers, so that we really try to show up and provide the science, provide the information about wetlands. We take people, we take decision makers and regulators out onto the landscape to show them and talk about what's happening so that they can see the land that is in question here. We have not been involved in the project that Juliana mentioned, but we certainly have been involved in other development and mining project proposals when those reviews are happening. It's not a huge part of our work because we really try to do a lot more proactive enabling rather than reactive prevention, but it is an important part of what we do.
Juliana, thank you. Pete in Wautoma has a question. Hi, Pete.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a couple hundred acres of wetlands on which they're taxed as recreational property. I also have a 40-acre parcel, which is legally drained wetland, that because it's for farming, it's a small fraction of what the taxes one would pay with recreational land. If I were to restore that to wetlands, my taxes would go up literally 30-fold on this. Even though I'm doing something to preserve the land, something really great for the environment, I'm wondering, is there any lobbying on the part of the wetlands organization in terms of trying to change this tax structure in state law so restored lands like this, we're not penalized for doing it? I'll take your answer off the air. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Kate? Pete, thank you so much. Sorry, Larry, I cut you off there.
No, that's all right. Go ahead, Katie.
I just wanted to say, Pete, thank you for bringing up this issue. It's such an important one. And honestly, I've been working at the Wetlands Association for more than 20 years, and it's something our organization has been working on sort of off and on in different ways for that whole time, because it's not a problem that has gone away despite our efforts. Part of the challenge is that the assessors who come out and decide what land category your land should be put into for taxation purposes, there's not consistency about what a given assessor will call something. This person over in this county might call it recreation land. This person might over here call it undeveloped or whatever the terms are. And so there's not consistency from landowner to landowner. And there has been some litigation in that area. And we have worked with the Assessors Association to try to do some training about what those issues are and the challenges and what the impacts are, because I think a lot of folks aren't making the connection about the tax revenues. And my opinion, our organization's opinion, is that people trying to do good things for their land, like Pete, shouldn't pay a price for that, right? We should have structures that reward people for doing things like wetland restoration, not structures and policies that deter them from making those actions. So it is an ongoing battle. We are aware of it. We are trying a number of different things. We haven't broken through yet, but it is something that needs fixing.
Bill and Mara, we'll get to you in just a minute, but a reminder, our guest today, as we talk wetlands, Paul Burns, fisheries biologist with the U.S. Forest Service, and Katie Belfast, director of outreach for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Thanks for joining us today. Larry Mueller here. We're talking wetlands today and taking a look at the the 25th through the 27th of February in La Crosse, the Wetland Science Conference that's being held. It's its 30th year. Paul Burns, a fisheries biologist with the U.S. Forest Service, will be a headliner at the conference, and Katie Belfast is director of outreach for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Great to have both of them with us. I want to go back for just a minute, Paul, to circle back to that question about the Canadian company drilling in Taylor County. Did you have any thoughts on that?
Since I'm not in Wisconsin when I work, I really can't comment on that project. I don't have any of the details, and it wouldn't be fair for me to comment on that.
Let's go to Bill and Merrill then. Bill, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I want to add a comment to an earlier caller. You know, when a person goes to the Wisconsin Wetlands Association website, there are many ways to give donations to the organization, but there's no mention to the threat of these gold and copper drilling projects that are taking place in the middle of our wetlands and our only national forest. They plan on dragging drilling equipment out onto the frozen wetlands and drilling through the wetlands to look for these things. I mean, when is the Wetlands Association going to weigh in to regulators on these concerns with this? This is, you talk about preserving wetlands. It doesn't get any more devastating than what these folks are going to do in the middle of Taylor County in the National Forest.
Katie, comment?
Sure. I'd be happy to comment and just say that just because you don't find information on our website doesn't mean we're not talking with folks about the issues that's going on. I'm not a member of our policy staff, and so I'm not doing that work. But we have policy staff who are regularly engaging with folks at the federal and state level, and they are following issues that are of concern. They are, sharing information as they know it. Many of these fights, we deliberately try to take a back seat because we want to be viewed as nonpartisan, science-based organization that's coming in with the facts and representing those. We will at times come out and be advocates publicly when there's a situation that we feel folks need to weigh in on. But often we do try to play a background role because we have found it's more effective than yelling and screaming at people, even though there's a point where that is really important. And we support people speaking up on behalf of wetlands. Thank you for that work. And we have a different approach.
Paul, I wanted to just turn to you on that for a minute. The national forests, I would expect, as somebody in your position, you probably did a lot of work in national forests out in your area.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, I spent, 29 years on the Sayusaw National Forest on the Oregon coast, working on a variety of projects from, commercial thinning to aquatic restoration projects to,
Is some of the work you did there transferable to Wisconsin?
Oh, sure. It's the same sort of public processes that happen with the Forest Service. We have, the same regulations that we have on the national forests and the same rules and regulations to deal with. So it would be, there are similarities across the country.
Yeah, I would think so. Ron in La Crosse, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Ron.
Yes, hi. I have a 140-acre managed forest that I work on and have been practicing taking downed timber as well as cullings and honeysuckle buckthorn and such and piling them to favor trees that I want to have receive more moisture and nutrients downstream of the, so like V's along the landscape. And I've noticed that not only have there become more springs, even in this dry period, but I've also seen this year, especially the emergence of several more springs. I'm wondering if this, like with the Edo period in Japan, where they realized that their fisheries and the ocean fisheries were intimately connected to the tannins that were produced by the trees and that they were necessary parts of a full ecosystem. I'm wondering if that can, as far as the hydrology and the nutrient cycling, can, if anybody's really working on codifying the benefits of potentially really working on forest mycelial mats and really helping reduce runoff in these extreme rainstorms and also make more resilient when there's these dry periods. So the evening out the swings with using these duff fields.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Probably have you both comment on that. Paul, do you want to comment first?
Sure. Thanks for the call. You bring up some really valid points that, restoring the wetlands or restoring streams is a whole watershed approach. You have to think about the uplands as well as the bottomlands because they're all connected as habitats develop. And there has been a lot of work looking at the production of wetlands and especially when you can restore that water table to the upper part of the wetland. So it's not, there's not a downcut stream working through it. It's amazing the amount of resilience as far as, you know, restoring springs and keeping that water table at the surface and what that provides for organisms, but also for the vegetation. You can see the vegetation change in there dramatically. So you get a lot of the good mix of species instead of being dominated by one species over, you know, and kind of taken over. So, you know, all your observations are kind of right on there.
Yeah. Katie, anything to add there?
I think the only thing I would add is that we culturally seem to have a predilection to cleaning things up and getting things tidy. And if a tree falls, we want to bucket up and stick it in our nice, tidy fire pile. I have a fire pile. Believe me, I love the nice, tidy fire pile. But sometimes, as our caller pointed out, Ron, leaving that stuff down is really important because it creates habitat, because it can slow down overland flow, because it can maintain some moisture. And so clearing out invasive species, yes, but leaving things downed trees or standing trees even for a woodpecker habitat, letting things be a little bit messy. I've learned so much from the quote-unquote stream restoration community also about the really vital role that trees and rocks and other biology has in terms of stream and river function and like the way that it changes movements in corridors. It's really fascinating. It's our plants and our plants are a big part of the way that our streams move and function, even though it doesn't always seem that way to some of us just looking at it without the training.
Dennis had emailed to say if we analogize wetlands with livers and kidneys, we can emphasize their usefulness. If we overload wetlands with pollution, we can't get transplants.
Yeah. Amen to that. That's a great analogy. Yep.
Tim in Naples, Florida, it's your turn. Hi, Tim.
Hi, can you hear me, Larry?
Yes, go ahead, Tim.
I was just saying, living in Minneapolis as well as the Driftless area, so I live down the Mississippi River. I'm now currently in, southwest Florida. And the Everglades is a perfect example of wetlands on how we have destroyed a major river, basically, coming out of the Okeechobee. And it has been killing coral reefs, and it all goes back to wetland restoration.
Yeah, yeah. Paul, you'd agree with that?
We've definitely had a lot of impacts on wetlands throughout the country, and the Everglades is a classic example of things that humans have done to impact wetlands.
Yeah.
I would say that, we've had this focus on the last sort of 20, 30 years on wetland delineation and protecting this, drawing a line around where is the wetland and protect inside the line and don't protect outside the line. And that has been important for a number of reasons, but it has caused this false idea that you only have to protect the wetland and disconnected the wetland from what we've said is this whole system. The whole watershed is connected, and wetlands are one part of that. And when we forget about those connections is when we can do real damage.
Yeah. Tim, thanks again. Stella in Sturgeon Bay, we'll go to you now. Hi, Stella.
Hi. Excuse me. The caller who called in and had 130 acres of wetlands and 80 acres of farmland and the tax taxed at very different rates made me think. I have seen in other contexts, I have seen the contribution that the environment, the monetary contribution that the environment makes to our economy. And I was wondering, would it be possible to work with somebody who's skilled at drafting legislation and draft legislation reflecting the monetary contribution that wetlands make to our economy and to our lives, and have that be the basis for assessing wetlands at a much lower rate.
Boy, would that be a great thing. I would love to see that happen. It's tricky, right? And there are lots of studies about the economic value of wetlands, the monetary value of the services that they provide. Those can be done well at a very high level, and they're very harder to do at a smaller local level. And so you get into that conversation of how much actually in this area, in my county or my jurisdiction, is the value. That's very, very hard to quantify. It's easier to quantify at a big level. I will say that we have a very active and very productive policy team in our organization that is working on and has been working on creating legislation to remove barriers to wetland restoration and care, and to encourage and promote our agencies to be making, you know, helping these things happen rather than having policies that maybe not intentionally, but are preventing people and deterring people from restoring wetlands. So Stella, I love the idea. I will pass it along to our policy team and they can add it to their very tall stack of their legislative dreams for protecting wetlands.
Thank you very much for that question. And Paul, anything to add to that? I mean, I assume there's been some work on this, on a broad spectrum, as Katie has mentioned.
Yeah, the only thing I could think to add to that is, you know, there are pretty active programs, like the NRCS has some, the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, where you can enroll portions of your land for restoration and get a tax break from that. So there are programs to help farmers and people who want to protect wetlands as well. So that'd be something for folks to look into.
Yeah, John in Green Bay had emailed in response to that landowner urging the caller to put his property into a land trust. It doesn't require public access. It merely requires you to give up in perpetuity development rights. Mm-hmm. And so a land trust is another way to look at it. Let's turn to Ed in Fond du Lac. Hi, Ed. Thank you for calling.
Hello. How are you today?
Great.
I was calling to just make a comment about farm fields. It seems as though the cows don't go in the pastures anymore, and the farmers have taking the opportunity to remove the fence rows and the small woodlots to expand their planting areas. And I would just be interested in your guess if they've observed that and the impact on the environment for doing that. Thanks.
Thank you, Ed, for calling. Katie, have a comment on that?
Yeah. My observation just driving around in Wisconsin is probably that Ed's got a point there, and it's more of a reflection, I think, of where agriculture is going in our country, generally speaking. It's a tough margin for a lot of farmers to produce these days, and they need all the acreage they can. So I don't blame them for making some of those choices. And I appreciate Ed's point that does have an impact on our waterways and on our wildlife and insect populations. So I think as a community, as a society, we need to have those conversations of how can we help farmers make a living, because we need them. We need all that food. And how can we also recognize that we need some of those natural areas too? And I'll say that having worked with a lot of farmers, there's plenty of them that know the value of wild places amongst their farm. And so I want to be really, really clear that many farmers, most of them, I would hazard to guess, are some of the top conservationists out there and love that nature. So we need to help make their bottom line easier and give them incentives to protect the wild areas so that they can continue in business and protect that land.
Katie Belfast, Director of Outreach for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. One of our guests, the other, Paul Burns, fisheries biologist with the U.S. Forest Service and a participant In the Wetlands Science Conference coming up February 25th and 27th. We can talk some more about that as well as we move along today. Question, though, about wetlands. I hope you'll join in or maybe a comment. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Talking wetlands today with Paul Burns of the U.S. Forest Service, a fisheries biologist there, Katie Belfus, Director of Outreach for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. And again, you can join in at 800-642-1234, email to talk@wpr.org. Tomorrow at this time, we'll talk to a home inspector and restoration consultant about best practices, and then we'll take a look at concrete driveways and decorative walkways. That's tomorrow on the Larry Mueller Show, so looking forward to that as well. But right now, zeroing in on wetlands, Katie, I saw that one symposia at the conference is dealing with tribal wetlands conservation. Who will be represented, or what will that cover?
Yeah, thanks. That's a great question. Yes, there's a wonderful symposium that our friends and partners over at the Natural Resources Foundation of Wisconsin has helped organize, along with members of the Tribal Wetlands Working Group, which is a regional group that it brings in all of the folks working on conservation in tribes in Wisconsin and our neighboring states as well. So the symposium aims to help non-tribal folks working in wetlands understand some of the context that's behind tribes, the history, the some of the cultural things that a person would need to be aware of when working with tribes, some of the fundamental ideas about ceded territories and things of that ilk, to understand sort of the bigger picture of what it means when you partner with tribes. And then another section, members of tribes in Wisconsin and neighboring states will be coming to share their projects that they are looking for partners to collaborate on, and those opportunities to build those bridges. So, and then there'll be a follow-up conversation where people can say, well, here's what we would need, or what kind of funding do we need, or how can we collaborate? So really starting that conversation to help other folks that might not think about working with tribes know that they're doing really, really important work in Wisconsin and nationally to care for the land and restore wetlands and watersheds, and need partners to engage in that work.
And I did want to mention, I think you're the number of in-person folks that can attend the conference, that's full up, which is kind of great news in a way. But if somebody's interested, they can still have a way to kind of participate.
Indeed. Well, yes, we sold out even before we reached our early bird deadline. We reached our fire capacity, and we've been working with the venue to try to figure out how we can accommodate more people and not break any laws, and we're there. We have a waiting list, so if you want to attend the conference in person, join the waiting list, because we have let people off that waiting list. Can't promise anything, but you can't get in if you don't get your name on that waiting list. And you can certainly get access to what we call our on-demand pass, which is access in March, beginning in March, to all of the recordings of all of the presentations, as well as the PDFs of the posters that are presented at the conference. You'll have access to that virtually, so you can go back and listen. We ask all of our presenters to record their talks ahead of time so that we're not trying to record a live presentation, because that's hard to do well and expensive to do well. But you get all the same great content of the presentations. You just don't get the live interaction and Q&A. So both of those opportunities available, the waiting list and the on-demand pass, are still available.
So how do people do that?
Great question. Conference.wisconsinwetlands.org is the website. And there's a registration page there with a big old button saying buy on demand or get my name on the waiting list. So you just got to choose the right button.
And I believe we've also added to our program notes to today's, if you go to talk@wpr.org/Larry, in our program notes for today's show, we have a link to the conference website as well, where people can go and get what you were just talking about. So there you go.
Awesome. And I would just invite folks to Larry Wednesday evening. Starting at 7 o'clock, we have our Wisconsin Wetlands Association annual membership meeting that we just reflect on our accomplishments over the past year and look to the next year and report that to our membership. So while the conference is sold out and closed, we still do invite folks who might want to come and learn more about the Wisconsin Wetlands Association to come down to the La Crosse Center on Wednesday at 7 p.m. to attend that annual membership meeting. And if you want to stick around for the 30th anniversary Wetland Science Conference Jeopardy game, we invite you to stick around for that as well.
Paul, are you in that Jeopardy game?
We'll see.
That sounds like kind of like fun, though.
We did it 10 years ago, and it was terrific fun. And so we're reprising it, bringing it back because people had a great time.
Charles in Waupaca has something. Let's go to Charles. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. You mentioned conservation trusts. Can you put like agricultural land and that includes wetlands and say, I want to keep this in its natural state? I want to keep it from being developed into residential lots. Can I, by putting it in a conservation trust, does it prohibit like a city nearby from annexing it and turning it into residential lots? Or can you prevent that by setting up a conservation trust?
Trust. Yeah. Go ahead, Katie.
So the legal thing is a conservation easement, and it's an agreement that's reached between the landowner and whatever entity is going to hold that easement. Usually it's a land trust. Sometimes it can be a government agency. The NRCS, Natural Resources Conservation Service, holds easements for certain properties. Some are permanent, some are 30 years or 10 years or whatever the program allows. And what you're doing is giving away your right to certain rights that you have as a landowner, development rights being one of the things that you can do. So it's a great way to protect land and keep it in its current state and keep it from being developed from a subsequent landowner of the property because it's actually attached to the deed. And the trick is you have to find somebody who's willing to hold that easement because they take on some responsibility for monitoring it and making sure that you're following the conditions and that, you know, that the agreement that you write up between the two parties is being followed. So land trusts are one agency, one kind of organization that can do that. In Wisconsin, we're lucky to have Gathering Waters, which is Wisconsin's alliance for land trusts. So they're a great group you can go to because they can connect you with all of the land trusts throughout Wisconsin and find the one that's in your community. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're interested because it's really important land. Sometimes they're not because they can't take on the burden of managing the easements. So, you know, it's up to each land trust to decide. But it is the conservation easement is a great tool to look into as a landowner if you are looking to make your stewardship of the land and your care of the land permanent in terms of protecting it from development or whatever other situation you're trying to avoid.
Charles, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in 800-642-1234. Paul, you've traveled to Russia to encourage environmental restoration there, and you've reviewed and assisted restoration projects, of course, in the national forests in the states of Oregon and Washington. What projects are you kind of most proud of?
You know, some of the more recent projects that we've done to restore wide valleys, so restore wetland conditions to some valleys that had been previously used for agriculture, you know, 100, 150 years ago. And we call that, you know, we definitely don't put blame on people for you know, what they did to be able to survive there initially, you know, when the areas were homesteaded. But we call it, you know, a friend of mine coined the term repurposing. Mm-hmm. So it's got a new purpose for the land out into the future. And so we've restored, you know, these wetland conditions to where it used to be wetlands. And you know, and thinking about how streams used to function in the area, you know, the way people see streams nowadays is, you know, you only remember as much, what they say, you only remember as much as the oldest person that's living in the landscape. So, you know, streams look a lot different now than they did, say, 200 years ago. and, you know, trying to educate folks and how the streams functioned back previously and what those conditions maybe look like, you know. So that's really what our whole group, our whole restoration group that I work with is really geared towards.
Katie, it sounds pretty cool.
It sounds awesome. And I'll just add that some people say, well, why are you restoring to something in the past that doesn't exist anymore? And I'll just say what you're restoring to is the last time that we think the conditions, the processes were before we added the harm, right? It's the best information about when we know things were working is why we choose a historic set of data points, for example. But what we're, the real focus is what were the processes and how can we restore those in a modern context? Because it's not possible to do all of the things that, you know, to get it back. But that's the way to make things healthy, and Paul's doing great work.
So one of the things I didn't mention, or haven't mentioned yet, I don't think, but one of the things that I thought would have been really cool part of your conference is the field trips.
Yeah, it seems kind of crazy, right, that you might take a field trip to a wetland in February, and I'd be remiss in letting people, February 2nd, we think of as Groundhog Day, but it's also World Wetlands Day, so just put that in your cap for next time. But we do take field trips in February, and we visit local area wetlands. It's one of the reasons we move our conference to a different location every year, so that we can highlight. So we've got three great field trips going out this year to wonderful places around the La Crosse River Marsh, a property owned by the Mississippi Valley Conservancy that they're restoring, and then Fish and Wildlife Service property where there's been some great restoration. So looking forward to those.
Yeah, it sounds like that would be really fun to get out there and just actually see what the heck's going on and how much has been done, really, to preserve and enhance and maybe restore various properties. I wanted to go back to your website for just a minute, because I've been on your website many times, and you have a lot of information for people, for landowners, for example. I looked, there's a lot of information for landowners who have wetlands, and another for communities. Talk a little about that, what people can find.
Thank you so much for asking that, Larry. And yes, we do a lot of work to help landowners understand more about their property. What kind of wetland do they have? How healthy is it? How could they make it more healthy? What resources are available to them? To really try to connect them with the information and tools and resource people to help them make good decisions about their property. We have a little handbook that's a nice primer to all of the ideas that I just mentioned. And there's a lot of links to other places where they can get information. And we're also happy to talk with folks if they want to give us a call at the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Sometimes we can even come out to your property and take a look, depending on where we are around the state, having meetings and things with other folks. So happy to do that. We also work with local communities, as you pointed out, and have some resources on our website to help communities make the case for wetlands to their leadership and find some ways that they can protect wetlands and work on behalf of wetlands in their community.
Well, it's pretty cool. And the conference, it's good to see that it's kind of almost sold out, but there's still a chance to at least get on the waiting list. And if not on the waiting list, you can maybe view the speeches and the speakers and the symposia that went on. Paul, Katie, thank you both so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it, and good luck at the conference.
Thank you so much, Larry. It's been really fun, and we always enjoy talking with you.
Paul Burns is a fisheries biologist with the U.S. Forest Service, a lot of experience. Katie Belfus, director of outreach of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Great to have them with us, and I'm sure Katie for sure will be back, and maybe Paul as well. Well, this and all of our shows are a team effort. Our producers are Clara Neipert and Joel Patnod. Our technical directors, Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins, and of course our executive producer, the one and only Jill Nadol. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you so much for listening, and stay with us. Lots more in store right through the afternoon here on WPR News.